Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Back in the saddle on Patriots.com Radio. Glad to be with you. John Rook here for Patriots Playbook. It's our one and only edition this week, just because of the short work week. Fact of the matter is, it's Jets week. Fact of the matter is, we got to play a game on Thursday night, and then, you know, and then we get the weekend off to watch a little football. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate, Kevin, all of the... I appreciate all the kind thoughts and comments from many in Patriots Nation over the course of the last week or so.
We had a public uproar with you gone.
Did you really?
Yeah, people were demanding a show.
So what did you end up doing?
Pretty much nothing. I could have done a show by myself, but I didn't get approval for that.
Well, you should do that. You know, I mean, you're certainly capable. You know as much as anybody else.
What's the word I'm looking for? I could just pirate the mic, you know,
pirate
the
mic.
Studio.
Yeah, precisely. That
just
would
not
work.
Tell Fred. All of a sudden, he gets all these menacing emails in to web radio on his phone, and he's like, wait, we have a show going on right now?
Yeah. Who is this guy who has pirated everything and locked himself in the studio doors in the bowels of Gillette Stadium?
Yeah, that would be no good. Not good for my resume.
No. Well, that's how Mike Adams got his job at WEEI. You knew that, right? That was all a stunt anyway.
Maybe I can get some fake hair like him, too.
There you go. See, it could work. No, you still have a little. You still a little on top. You're all right.
With DA leaving, I could be just the fake haired nighttime host over.
Yeah,
at,
that's true. 98.5. That's true. Congrats to Damon Amendola. He's taking his local show on 98.5 Network, which for the CBS Sports Network, which launches 24/7 after the 1st of January. That's very, very cool deal. Well, for those that don't know, if you're wondering what the hell we're babbling about here, a week ago today, I woke up with a stomach ache, and I'm thinking, well, that's kind of unusual. I sit down at my desk, and then I could feel it just kind of move around in my backside, and I knew right then and there what it was, because anybody who's had kidney stones can attest, you know it when it hits you. If you're getting it for the first time or you've never had it, it feels like, honestly, it feels like, you know, someone's taken like a brand or a tire iron or something and put it in hot, you know, put it in hot coals, and then they're sticking you with it in the stomach. That's basically what it feels like. The first time I ever had it about 5 years ago, I thought I was having a heart attack. And then, of course, I learned that it wasn't quite that way, but the only thing you can do is just, you know, hopefully get a little medication for it and then start drinking, and I don't necessarily mean alcohol, but drinking and getting rid of it quickly and trying to pass it. And that's fortunately what I did, but it took me out of commission all last Tuesday, and it put my basketball trip last week in perilous danger, which I didn't want to miss out on at all, because I got, you know, 5-6 days in Puerto Rico over the course of last week covering a college basketball tournament, and there wasn't any way I was missing that. So that's where we were last week. Everybody's hale and hearty and ready to go, and disappointed, of course, that it's really only one show this week, but at the same time, hey, you do what the schedule tells you to do, and the Patriots play the Jets on Thursday. Now, obviously, we're going to try to combine a lot of different elements into today's show. Yes, there is some Nitpick Tuesday to talk about in the show, and there's a huge nitpick that I've had several people already Facebook me on, and we'll get into that. Today, we also need to predict for Thursday's game, because even though the PFW guys will be here tomorrow, it's about the time our show is supposed to start at 2 o'clock that they're letting everybody go here at Gillette tomorrow. So there ain't going to be anybody here to run the show, except we're going to have replays for you here on Patriots.com Radio. So we need to get into our predictions for Thursday and the Jets game. So I want you to fire those off as well. So we got a lot of different things to talk about. There's also another implosion going on in the college ranks with Maryland and Rutgers leaving, you know, the ACC and the Big East respectively for the Big Ten. If you want to jump into some of that, you can, because it does have a trickle-down effect in this pro sports. In fact, here's kind of what I think about that, just off the top of my head, but professional sports, at least we know they're in the business to make money. Colleges greedily hide behind the auspices of learning and academia. You know what that is? That's complete and total bullcrap. Jim Delaney, you know, the commissioner of the Big Ten, and John Swofford, the commissioner of the ACC, all of them. You know, they all need to have their heads examined because actually even more so than those guys, college presidents in each of the institutions that have been involved in moving from conference to conference, they all need to have their heads examined because they have long ago lost sight of the fact that they're supposed to have the student in student athletes to consider first. They haven't done that in decades. The NCAA also is a huge problem here because when they allowed conferences to start going to conference championship games but required leagues to have a minimum of 12 teams in order to conduct a lucrative conference football championship game, the NCAA has got a hand in this too. They've let it completely get out of control. They should let everybody who wants to hold a championship game hold one, period. And so we're getting a little bit closer to the mega conferences, you know, three or four leagues that have 16 teams in them, and that's going to be it. And everybody else is going to be so much cannon fodder that's out there. And by the way, is there any more irrelevant programs out there in their respective leagues than Maryland in the ACC or Rutgers in the Big East? Oh, my Lord. They can't compete now. And they won't compete in the Big Ten. And anybody that thinks they will is just, I don't know what are you thinking? Although some basketball-wise or football-wise might think they could compete football-wise because the Big Ten is not good in football. They're not. With the exception of Ohio State and every once in a while Michigan and Wisconsin. It's not good in football. Basketball, no way. So, I don't know what to tell you, but professional sports is the route to go. As much as I like to follow and as much as I cover for my living college athletics, I'm beginning to turn more toward the pro page because, quite honestly, at least we know what we're getting here. And the colleges have long ago, sold their souls to the devil and money, or vice versa, money and the devil. And they probably go one and the same. So anyway, I'll opine a little about that later on this week, probably on GoLocalProv.com or whatever, but you're welcome to, you know, contribute your comments as well. So here's how you reach the program. webradio@patriots.com, the email address, the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398, 508-298-0398, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, on Facebook. Submit the friend request. If you haven't, we can post and we can chat. And then you can also hit me up on Twitter, @JRook0722, J-R-O-O-K-E 0722. That's the Twitter page. A lot of new Twitter followers lately. Thank you so much. It's awesome. Awesome to talk to each and every one of you from time to time. Whenever I see some great points that are being made, I like to jump into the conversation almost randomly. So it's good stuff today, and that's what I was doing earlier today on this whole Maryland and Rutgers to the Big Ten. You know, the problems just continue to persist, and until college presidents, they're put in position to do one thing and one thing only, and that's make money for their universities. So they can go to their board of directors and their board of regents and say, look what I did. Now, erect that GD statue of me at the front entrance to our stadium. Because I brought in millions of dollars to this institution. We spent millions of dollars, but I also brought it in. Those guys should all be... Well, I'll put it to you this way. They'll have their day of reckoning. And it may come sooner than you think. It may come sooner than you think. I've got some things on the Patriots as well. Obviously, anytime you win and you win a game 59-24, you tie a franchise record for points scored. You outshine the ballyhooed rookie quarterback in Andrew Luck. You score the football so many different ways that it truly shows the potential for the versatility that you have in your football team. You can't be, it's pretty hard to nitpick that. But, as you well know, if you've been a part of this program for any length of time, then you know we manage to do that and do that quite often as we like to do our nitpicks. Biggest nitpick that I have. You got to start with Rob Gronkowski being on an extra point where he breaks his arm with about, what was it, 4 minutes and change left to go in the game? Kevin, did anybody say today definitively or ask Bill definitively today why he was in the point, the special teams there?
No, I mean, well, they asked him yesterday on Patriots Monday. And it's just that's the way it is. He always is on it no matter what. They never changed that unit up, I guess.
Well, clearly we saw that that was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, his argument basically was, I don't know, like his exact words were something to the effect of, if we use somebody else and somebody comes unblocked on the backside and takes out Gostowski and Mesko, like, we're in the same mess. So that
but
was
you can't find somebody else that can block. I mean, I know Rob's a good blocker, but he's so much more valuable to this team in other areas. I'm just not buying that. And to me, that's poor game management. That's all it is. It's just poor game management. Is he the best player? Yeah, probably. I'm sure that's why they put him in there, because he was the best man for the job. And I guess in a sense, I understand that. But when you consider that you're leaving him out there for an opportunity like this, especially with 4 freaking minutes left in the game, you can't find some other schlub to go in there and block? Who can actually, I mean, how interested do you think the Colts really are going to be in blocking an extra point when they're down 59-24? Really? I'm not buying that. I'm sorry. Not buying it. That's just poor management. And I realize you can't keep track of everything. It's very difficult. But there's somebody's job on that sideline to keep track of who is in what position. And whether the, you know, since it's special teams, if it's, you know, special teams opportunity, if it's special teams, you know, that has the responsibility there, or if it's the offense that knows where their personnel is, or if it's Coach Belichick, because he's the head coach and he should know everything that's going on. I don't know. I'm not going to point the finger at any one person. I'm going to say this is a systematic failure to recognize that you've got somebody who's going to end up now costing you potentially more money or more wins or more something on down the line, because you got him in there blocking for a meaningless extra point. Meaningless! You don't need it. Easy for us to sit here and say. That's right. Coaches would say that too. Easy for you to sit there and say. But there's got to be somebody who's in charge of quality control on the sideline that knows who's supposed to go in and who's supposed to go out. And you got to be thinking, when you're up by 35 freaking points with late in the game, it's like, you know what, let's not use any regulars in here. Special teams, let's go. You know, I mean, they've got, I'm sure that they've worked on this, and I'm sure they've got, contingency plans. What if Gronk had gone out in the first quarter? What if he had gone out in the first quarter? Don't you think they'd have found somebody else to block for his butt on the extra point team? Or are they just going to go with 10 players on the field? I was horrified when I saw it and then heard after the game that he'd broken his arm on an extra point attempt. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That is so embarrassing. Incredibly embarrassing. I'm not buying the crap about, oh, this is football, it's a tough sport, you know, injuries happen all the time, which is the standard company line. I'm not buying it. This could have been avoided. It should have been avoided. And it wasn't. So, I don't know. That's my rant. I don't know if you agree or disagree. You certainly are welcome to do one or the other or both. But webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, @JRook0722. Twitter. Russell Baxter will join us in the 3 o'clock hour today. He normally joins us on Thursdays. But Russell has graciously agreed to make a Tuesday appearance, since we will not have programs either today or certainly on game day on Thursday. And we'll be off enjoying the holiday. And there, of course, will be some of us will actually have to work on Thursday, which we will. Obviously watching the Patriots game. And then I'll be on NBC Sports Radio Thursday night from 7 until 10 p.m. Eastern time. And I will be doing the national talk show for Eric Cassilius that night, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot of NFL, a lot of Patriots, a lot of college football, a lot of college sports that are going on at this time, but I'll be doing it from the studio that just right across the way here that I'm looking at. So they like me when I'm doing it from Foxborough, and since the Patriots will be playing at the time, that's what they wanted me to do. So as you're watching the Pats, here's a suggestion for you. Log on to NBCSportsRadio.com. There you go. At the same time, then you can hear me. We can have conversations. You can watch the Patriots. We can even talk about the game as the game's going on. And we can do it on national sports radio. How's that? Just a thought for Thursday, because I really don't want to be by myself on Thanksgiving. You know, I don't mind working the holiday so much. You know, my kids are away, but I don't, you know. It's still, you know, you like to spend it with friends. So here's my invitation to you. Join me online. NBCSportsRadio.com. Thursday night, 7 to 10 Eastern. And we'll do that. All right, so what are your thoughts on the game? You have other nitpicks besides Gronkowski? Anytime you win 59 to 24, is there anything else that needs to be addressed? Curious to know. Let's go to Brian in Brighton, Mass. Brian, you're in the playbook. How are you today?
Good. How you doing?
Good, Brian. Thanks.
I'm glad you're feeling better, man. I've never experienced that, and I don't look forward to it as I get older.
Well, thanks. It can happen to anybody at any age, but
it sounds inevitable.
Yeah, I will tell you that it's not a lot of fun, and I have, you know, this is my second time to go through it, and I have tremendous respect for women who give birth because I've been told by, you know, doctors, nurses, and anybody else who's had them that this is about as close an equation as men can experience to a woman giving birth.
I never touched that topic. I'm sorry. I have no opinion on that.
Well, it's probably better because yeah. I don't really think that there's anything that guys can do to, you know, assuage a woman's, you know, attitude about that. It's like, there's no comparison about that. Giving birth is way worse.
And it's just a dark road.
It's probably
there's no value.
A road, yes, a road better left untraveled. Probably so. So what's on your mind?
I called because you made me jump on something. But first of all, while I was waiting for you, I want to say that I don't agree with you at all on the Gronkowski nitpick.
Okay.
And here's why. I just think that there's something that's very important when it comes to the NFL and football in general, and even in college football, which is why I called. But just the value of players being able to just play. And not kidding. I mean, they're all hurt, right? But they're playing, and they're on the field,
right.
And you rely on them. You look at the Wes Welker, the Tom Brady. I mean, the Peyton Manning. I mean, it's amazing, and I hate to say it, but even Favre, you know, you got to look at that and just be impressed that you went out and played every Sunday for years. And, you know, I bring up that, you know, it took Brady tearing an ACL. It took Manning with this freak injury that took him out for a year. And it amazes me. So when someone like Gronkowski gets hurt, okay, yeah, it's a little play. It's there. But every play is a potential injury. It amazes me. I kind of do agree with the I like the comment that Belichick gave yesterday where he was like, well, tell me who's going to get hurt, and I'll take him out.
Yeah, that was actually, you're right, Brian, that was pretty good. In a sort of a flip way, I get it. But here's the thing. When you know that you're trying to build a team for the long haul and that your team financially stands to better itself in wins, in monetary gain and everything, if you can have just a little bit of management skill, you know, going on here, don't you think it's incumbent upon the coaches and the powers that be to instigate that? Why would you put a guy like Rob Gronkowski in harm's way in something as meaningless? I mean, we bitch about this in the preseason. That's just why regular players don't play in the preseason. It's still football, and they still get hurt. But why put them out there more times to increase their chances for injury?
Well, but look, right? Don't you see the hypocrisy that you're complaining now that he got because he's injured, but you didn't complain all season when he was always on PAT?
I'll be honest with you. I never noticed it.
We never noticed.
That's right.
Until he got hurt. Right?
Well, but here's the, but that doesn't lessen the stupidity of it. It doesn't, I mean, maybe that makes us stupid for not realizing it, but it doesn't lessen the stupidity. In fact, if anything, I think it makes it more stupid because they're playing with fire, Scarecrow.
Okay.
And they just got burnt.
Yeah, okay. I really don't want to get into this topic because I just listened to 2 hours of it on PFW and all day yesterday on EEI.
No problem.
Red Sox.
Okay, fair enough.
But what I want to touch on is your college football brand.
Yeah.
And this really set me off because there was this big 60 Minutes thing, this big expose that colleges are football programs are about making money and trying to compete, spending millions on their stadium. Where the hell have you been?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of expose is that? So I went to grad school at UNC.
Yep.
And when I first went there, it was like 2000. And I remember I went, my brother came down with me. We go in there, and the football stadium was open to just walk in.
Right.
We could walk in. And we're like, this is Foxborough Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is nicer than Foxborough. That's impressive. Like, this is not, it's a money thing. And college football is just, it's not just college football, though. So, again, I went to UNC. You think we don't have that stuff going on with basketball as well? I mean, it's all a fraud. The ACC coming in and stealing the teams, Rutgers and everything like that. And it baffles. Like, just admit it. It's there. It's the elephant in the room that everyone knows. Why is that becoming like a news story here and there? You know, like, it's an expose that colleges spend this money.
Right.
You know, UNC's got this whole thing now with the whole cheating scandal that's going on, and I'm just waiting for that to reach the basketball.
It's gonna. It absolutely is going to, because now what I think is going to end up happening here is that, you know, believe it or not, it only takes one little domino for everything else to just completely go.
The whole house of cards will fall.
It's gonna fall, and I think that this might be the one, because I think the ACC's in real trouble right now. And I think Virginia, Boston College, I think Miami, I think Florida State, I think these schools are all looking potentially to maybe look for a better deal. And this is why I think the Big East has a chance to survive here, as opposed to it being the one that's going to get knocked into oblivion. It's because, you know, I think what's going to end up happening here is we all know, Brandon, that all things in life are cyclical, and, you know, we used to have these regional rivalries and these conferences that made geographical sense and what have you, and now we've gone to these national footprints. It's going to come back full circle, and teams are not – eventually, all this money – I saw a report that a friend of mine, Pete Thamel, who writes for Sports Illustrated now, he did the research and found that the Big Ten – this is why Rutgers and Maryland are jumping. The Big Ten is estimating payouts to each school – of their membership by 2017, they're estimating the annual payout to be $46 million a year. Holy crap. Now,
hey, and these are nonprofits.
Exactly. Do you think any of this money, though, by the way, do you think any of this money is going to go back to paying tuitions? And yet tuitions in colleges are skyrocketing to the point where the average person cannot afford to go to school without indebting themselves to the man and to the country and to the neighborhood bank for the rest of their working lives.
Oh,
that is the absolute hypocrisy of this country with all of these quote-unquote institutions of higher learning. That is the biggest bunch of crap I've ever heard in my life. These institutions of higher learning are nothing more than banks.
Well, so here's what I've always said, and I think student-athletes should be paid. I think that...
Oh, they should be. Yes, I agree.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's flat-out hypocrisy, the money they make off of that. Now, I don't know. I don't know how the money gets spent, and student loans and so forth are... I mean, that's a whole nother ballpark in itself.
Right.
But, I mean, it's just... I mean, admit what it is. That is the minor league, especially for football and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It's the minor league. And these poor kids, I mean, I've said it before, and I'm one of the few people, I feel bad for athletes because I just don't know. Like, for every Tom Brady, there's thousands of failures. And what do you do at 21 when your whole life you were told you were going to be elite, make millions, and, yeah, you're working at Kinko's? No offense, Kinko's.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you're 6'2", 250, and what? What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you weren't at school to learn. That was, no. What are you doing studying? So, I don't know. And for the record, I actually, not my department, but, you know, as a grad student at UNC, I taught, and, you know, I had other grad student friends. And, I mean, like, it was actually a girl in one of the departments, I won't say which.
Mm-hmm.
She actually told me when she first came to grad school that the chair of her department, when they talked to all the students preparing them to teach, told them they were an athlete-friendly department. Take that as you will.
Okay, fair enough. None of that comes as a surprise. None of it.
No. So someone like you who's involved in college, I mean, this is just—it's all a charade. It's just absurd, and it just. It frustrates me to no end, because it's like these stories come out, these rants come out, and it's like, enough already. Like, let's just expose it and just, like, do something realistic with it instead of playing this game of jumping from division to division and admit what it really is. It's a business just like the NFL. It's a business just like MLB and NBA, et cetera. That's it.
Yeah. It's nothing more than a business anymore. It's a sad indictment on our culture and our greed and our avarice and our ability to try to step on top of one another. You know, all collegiality has been thrown out the window. And anybody who says, well, this is college and we're supposed to be collegial to our counterparts, bullcrap. And I have much stronger words for that as well, but I won't say that because this is supposed to be a family program. So all I will tell you is that anybody who tells you anything other than we did it for the money, they lie, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Exactly.
They lie. Absolutely. They lie. Because I saw today the quote when Rutgers announced for going to the Big Ten. Quote from Jim Delaney, the Big Ten commissioner, who said, you know, because the question had come up and said, well, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's nice that you've been able to, you know, throw this financial lifeline to schools like Maryland and Rutgers who are struggling for it financially in the overall scheme of things. And his answer, and I'm paraphrasing here, was, well, we're glad that we can be of service, that our money-making ability can be of service to someone. He's in this job exactly to make money. He's in the job to make money, but they hide behind the guise and the disguise of intercollegiate athletics and studiousness and learning. And just stop now. Do not do that anymore, because you are lying.
Well, and I call you out on this, Rook, too, because that was the thing that also frustrated me. It's like this CBS 60 Minutes expose. I just watched college football all day on CBS on Saturday.
Yeah, right.
I mean, come on. I mean, you make a living off it yourself. I mean,
there's no question. There's no question. And it is a big business. I do make some of my living off of it, and that's fine. I don't make my entire living off of it, but yeah, some of it, there's no doubt, because it is a big business. But what I'm talking about is I'm talking about the administrators, the college presidents, and then, of course, the commissioners of these leagues who are basically hired by the college presidents to make more money for their schools. Okay? The commissioner is brought in by the institutions of the league. So I don't blame the commissioner so much, because they're being hired by the people that run these leagues or run these schools. I blame the college presidents. And secondarily, I blame the NCAA. Because the NCAA has said, hey, you can go out and make this money, but, oh, guess what? You can't go out and make the money, and they're doing this arbitrarily, unless you have a minimum of 12 schools to play a conference championship football game. Well, you know what? If you're really about everybody and you're really about being all-inclusive, then let everybody play for a conference championship game, any league. Don't set parameters. Why is there a parameter to begin with?
Yeah, that loophole created, just exposed everything.
You know what the ironic thing is, Brian? The ironic thing here is that the NCAA is basically signed its own death warrant, because this thing is going to get so big if they got to actually two or three or four leagues of 16 teams, these power conferences. Why do they need the NCAA anymore?
Yeah.
Go make your own damn rules and say goodbye to the NCAA. And now the NCAA is out of business.
And where are the Arlen Specters in the world now that he's passed? You're worried about the Patriots cheating?
That's exactly right.
You know, that's professional sports. You know what it is.
Yeah.
You know what it is.
Good point.
You play to win.
Good point.
You play to win. You do whatever it takes, whatever edge you can get.
Correct.
Back in the 70s, if you could take steroids, you take them.
Yeah.
I mean, and who knows what they're on now? Like, you can't figure it out.
Something that's undetected, undoubtedly. I hate to be cynical like that. I really do. I don't want to be cynical like that. But until we see reason not to be, you have to assume almost that everybody is doing something that probably shouldn't be done.
I don't consider it cynical, though, myself, because, I mean, the fact is, like, I loved going to the football games at UNC. I loved going to the basketball games. I mean, they were awesome. They were so exciting and so fun, just like going to a Patriots game or just like going to a Celtics or Red Sox game.
Right.
And it didn't decrease one bit in terms of excitement.
Maybe
even more exciting. So just admit what it is. That's all. It's just, it seems like it's just, it's denied, but yet it's known, yet it comes out here and there and people are shocked.
Yeah, and they should be. I know, and they absolutely should not be. Hey, this has been awesome chatting with you, Brian. Thank you very much for the phone call today. Talk to you soon. I hope you'll call back. Let's go to Eldridge in North Carolina. Eldridge, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good, buddy.
I'm doing good, too.
Good.
Basketball, I don't follow that much. But I always knew it was a moneymaker anyway. I just couldn't understand this. Every time somebody says something about moneymaking, if they pay an athlete, you know, that they get in trouble, get NCAA sanctions and all that, but you're making it anyway. To me, that's a double standard.
Yeah, all of it is a double standard as far as I'm concerned. I mean, even the term student-athlete is a double standard, Eldridge. And the NCAA insists during the basketball tournament, during March Madness every year, that, you know, we refer to our players as student-athletes. If I hear that one more time, I'm going to vomit.
I understand, but I guess what they're trying to say is, one, we're trying to, you know, prepare you for the future being a student. If you do good in athletic department, you know, you got a double, you know, you got a double. But if you don't, you know, like I said, 1,000 kids come out.
Yeah.
Only very few makes the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
So you got something else to fall back on.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Well, there is a little truth to that, but I just think it's so hypocritical. I mean, they just need to say, hey, if you'd like to ask a question of our dollar signs, please do so. You know, because that's what they are. All these student athletes, here we go again. All these players, all they are is representing dollar signs to their schools. And these kids don't get any of this huge money back. It's way past time. These kids deserve to be paid above and beyond their scholarships.
I agree with that. Because like I said, it's a money-making racket. They ain't better than NFL, I think, in some cases. In some organization.
Well, you know, there are some kids that used to be rumored back when, you know, SMU did all their, you know, bad stuff back in the 80s that cost that program, you know, the death penalty. There's some, in fact, I remember Craig James, former New England Patriot. He used to go through a lot of kidding that he made more money in SMU than he ever did as a rookie in the NFL with New England.
I think I heard that rumor too.
And I believe there might be some truth to that, to be quite honest with you.
Well, getting back to the Patriots, because like I said, NCAA basketball stuff, I'm kind of a little slow in. I agree with you 100%. You know, the last 4 minutes of the game, I'll pull all my starters out, especially if we up by 35 points. There's no need in that. No sense in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the long haul is we got 6 games left. Then you got, really, you got 10. But 7, then you got 10. Because we don't get no first round bye. So we're going to be running, you know, playing. So you need all your guns with you. And since he's the leading gun, you need him, you know.
Right.
And me and Andy was talking earlier, I don't agree with you just can't put somebody in there. No, you got 20,000 ends out there, tight ends, that blocks and can catch, you know. And they can't replace Gronk for one play for 4 minutes. I disagree with it because they got a depth chart. And that's why it's called a depth chart.
Eldridge, there's no question about that. I mean, if he had gotten hurt early in the game, they'd have had to do it. And they would have been forced to do it. So what the hell is the difference?
I don't know. And that's stuff about Bill's not well. No, I've been saying this for a couple of years. I know he's the head honcho. He's running the show and everything. But as far as his GM sense, I think he's losing a little bit.
Well, I don't.
By picks and everything.
I have to admit,
a little little bit.
I have to admit, I have some doubts. I have some doubts, but I think we realize, though, that that's just not going to stay. It's not going to change. It's not going to change. As long as he's here, as long as he chooses to be here, he's going to coach, and he's going to be the general manager, and he's going to be the czar, and he's going to be the dictator, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, when he decides to step down, then maybe you think about, you know, dual roles or two different guys coming in and wearing different hats, but until that point in time, it's not going to happen. I've accepted that, and I take the good with the bad, and I think it's fine, because largely it's pretty hard to argue against it. I will tell you is that each time there is a screw up, he should expect the scrutiny. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, he should. Yeah, he should. And getting back to that defense, I'd like to know, where was it the last couple weeks ago? You know, especially during our losses. I ain't never seen them blitz so effectively and much. And the only thing I wish they would do was just the cover guys just been a little bit more closer to the receivers. But I can understand the receivers a little bit faster than our secondary is.
Yeah.
But they played an awesome game after Luck threw their first touchdown. And I just wonder where all that come from. I haven't seen it the whole year. Not blitzing like that.
What come from now? What'd you say?
You know, the way they was blitzing to get to the quarterback. Oh, and, you know, I mean, they was constantly hammering Luck.
I think that had a lot to do with the game plan on Indianapolis and feeling like they found a weak link on the offensive line. And I think it goes back to partly, you know, one of the things I know that had been talked about last week was the fact that a rookie quarterback hadn't won in Foxborough since 1995. And part of that is because they've always had a good way of throwing different things to a quarterback, a rookie that's as inexperienced as Luck was and relatively still is, and causing him, you know, confusion. And I think they did a good job with that. I certainly would love to have seen more of it, but I think they felt more confident in the blitzing because they have a guy like Aqib Talib who is back there. And you know, he's not without a little bit of fault himself, because while he did have the pick six and he looked very Ty Law-ish, he looked very Ty Law-ish in his return for the touchdown, but he also got picked on a couple of times. See, he still got some work to do.
Yeah, he does, because he's out of shape, you know. You could tell because it'll rest him a little bit. You know, I figured once he gets his game leg on him after a couple of games, it might be a whole lot better, but not, you know, superstar level, but I think a whole lot better than what he did.
Well, I certainly like the depth, and I think the defensive backfield is going to be better, and it will continue to get better if we can ever get the stinking safeties, you know, well again, because, you know, no Chung, no Gregory, you know, and I understand. But
Gregory was playing.
Well, how much did he play?
The whole game.
Did he play the whole game?
Yeah,
my mistake then. I didn't notice it because I was watching the game from afar, so I did not notice it.
Okay, him and which guy was on number 32 was on the other side of the safety.
Well, Devin McCourty. I know he played because I saw him. And frankly, I don't think Gregory's the guy anyway that should be out there. It should be McCourty and Chung, I think, eventually. And then you'd have, allegedly, you know, Talib and Dennard, corner with, Arrington probably playing the nickel. So, and I think that's what we largely saw in a lot of instances on Sunday. So, and I'm sure there are others that would look at it a little bit more closely that might be able to, you know, clarify. But I just, you know, it's depth-wise, it's improved. It's still going to be a work in progress.
Well, I got a couple more questions. Two more questions. I'll let it go at that.
Go.
Is Will Allen still hurt? The free safety we got from number two.
He was cut.
He still hurt?
He was cut.
Will Allen.
He's gone.
He's cut?
Yeah.
Okay, read my max, because I still see him on the roster. That's why I was wondering.
What roster are you looking at?
The one that when you go to web radio.
Yeah.
And above there, you know, you got the team. Then you hit team and roster is there.
Oh, well, I'll double check that. I thought he was cut. In fact, I thought he had picked up with another team. All right, maybe I'm confusing with someone. I'll see what I can find out.
Okay, I'll look at it then. All right, man. Thank you.
All right, Eldridge. Thanks. Appreciate that. You got it. Big Al and Valdosta. Hello, Big Al.
Hey, what do you say, John Rock? You feeling better?
Yes, sir. Thank you for asking.
Well, good. And happy holidays certainly to you and everybody up there with the Pats.
Same
happy
to you.
Given.
Same to you.
Listen, here's the thing on Gronkowski. I don't disagree with him being out there if that's his assignment, but I do question him having that assignment generally.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And although I think it's always been sort of something that's been, you know, sort of a hallmark and a trademark of the Belichick era, where we've gotten these guys that do multiple things and are willing to do multiple things, and, oh, look at Mike Vrabel catches 27th touchdown pass, isn't that cool? And, you know, I get all of that, but, you know, I think you can kind of overdo that stuff. You know, I remember when Richard Seymour used to come in. I mean, didn't Richard Seymour do enough for this team? And he might have been willing to come in and be the elephant blocker or whatever, the play fullback near the goal line. But why would you do he got goal line 1 year, I think it was 2005,
mm-hmm.
and we scored a touchdown, and somebody rolled him from behind, and he missed like 6 or 8 weeks because he got rolled from behind on one of his legs, kind of a Aaron Hernandez high ankle sprain thing where he got rolled from behind on a regular play. And, you know, we lost Richard Seymour for a bunch of time because he had to come in and block on the goal line. I mean, you can say it can happen on any play, and they're football players and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, as a fan, there's just, for some reason, you know, a guy gets hurt doing what he's paid to do is one thing, but if he gets hurt doing something else, you're wondering, you know, why is he doing that something else? You know, why does Richard Seymour need to be blocking for the tailback on the goal line? Can't somebody else do that? You know, why does Rob Gronkowski have to be blocking on the edge for the kicker? I know we don't want the kicker to get hurt.
Yep.
But is there somebody else that maybe is you're going to be losing about 10% effectiveness, but you preserve Rob Gronkowski? You know, it's just, I think we've, over the years, we've kind of overdone that thing with the expanded skill set. I understand why, for example, Wes Welker and Troy Brown and Julian Edelman run back punts because as slot receivers, they got the shifty moves, and that's what you need running back punts. I almost see that as an extension of the job of a slot receiver,
mm-hmm.
you see. That I can deal with. But if you all of a sudden decide you're going to take, I don't know, Troy Brown or Julian Edelman or Wes Welker, and we're going to make him, I don't know, we're going to make him a tailback, you know, for a series of downs because we just want to be clever. You know, why? What are you doing that for?
Yeah.
Who are you trying to impress? You know, football is a game of positions. Guys have jobs. You know, do your job. And, you know, even though somebody might be willing to do other things, maybe there's a time where you got to step up and say, hey, listen, you know, for the good of the group, we need to have this guy concentrate more on his job.
Right.
Rather than doing all these other things. So
okay.
I don't, if that was his job to be out there, then okay. But I just don't think he should have been out there.
No, he should not have been. And you're right about it. If it was his job, I understand all that. He was out there because it was his job. But
that's
I'm
right.
just saying we have to have some oversight here. Somebody
yep.
who's in charge of quality control. Somebody who recognizes
yep.
that, geez, you know what? Do we really need a starter out there on a special teams thing when we're up by 34 freaking points? I mean, come on. Really?
And this is, you know, this is as far as nitpick, let me transition into my nitpick, which is along the same lines. You go back and look at that, the replay of the game, which I do every week. I have the, you know, the NFL.com replays, and
mm-hmm.
you look at the, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a really good service, and you really break it down by the clock, and sometimes it's easier to pay attention to things on the replays than you're so caught up in the action during the actual game, you don't really pay attention to every clock and score and everything like that. But, you know, it's 7 minutes to go. We've got a 28-point lead, and Tom Brady is still in that football game.
Yeah, I know.
Julian Edelman runs back a punt. He almost broke a second one. Julian Edelman had the game of his life.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great. Anyway, he runs one back in the first half. The second half, he runs one back to over midfield. There's about 7 minutes and change left. We've got a 28-point lead. There's no way we're losing this game unless we just all quit en masse.
Yeah,
just walk
right.
off. And we still got Brady out there, and he's still whipping the ball around. Now, you know, what if Brady got hurt again? And, you know, I suppose the response would be, well, he could have got hurt on any play. Well,
that's a cop-out, Al. That's an absolute 110% cop-out.
There you go. I mean, I agree. I mean, there's one thing for Tom Brady to get hurt. in the first quarter of the first game of the year against the Chiefs, and you say, well, that's football. But in the fourth quarter with 7 minutes to go and a 28-point lead against the – I mean, come on, Bill. Ryan Mallett is sitting over – we're paying him, too. Throw him out there.
Do you really believe – does anybody at this stage of the game really believe that Ryan Mallett is going to be the quarterback of the future? I don't.
He must have absolutely – if he's not going to play in a situation like that, he must have no future.
I'm just telling – hey, I couldn't agree more. He's got – I mean, by the way, speaking of quarterbacks, did you see Brian Hoyer sign with Pittsburgh today?
No, I did not see that.
He did. Both Brian Hoyer and – Plaxico Burress signed with Pittsburgh.
Okay. So they got one of our guys and they went back to like a golden oldie.
Yep. Yep.
Or as Ty Law used to call him, plexiglass.
Yeah, plexiglass. No question. He did. But Brian Hoyer, he might. I'd probably be a little surprised, but he might start this weekend.
He just might. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with Charlie Batch, but, you know, he didn't play Sunday night after Lefkowitz was, you know, nicked up a little bit. And so,
right.
La-di-da.
Right.
I'm not sure what they're doing over there, but I wish they would have beat the damn Ravens for us. I know that.
I was actually glad to see Brian Hoyer get picked up.
Oh, for his sake, yes. You always like to see. And this is a hallmark of the Belichick era. Let's give credit where it's due. You see guys get cut from the Patriots, and you know, whether you say good riddance or that's too bad or whatever, but they do end up on other teams. Whereas back in the day, when they got cut from the Patriots, that was their last chance. They were out of football.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no kidding.
Now we got guys that are still got some game left.
Right. You know, we haven't squeezed every ounce of football talent out of them just yet. So, you know.
But I hate to play what if and all that. Just bothered me to see Brady out there. What if something disastrous had happened in that situation? I mean, you think we're going nuts over Gronkowski?
I know.
Good God. Let's have Pollard III or somebody dive at his legs out there with 7 minutes to go. I think we gotta.
It's crazy, and I'll be honest with you, Al. I've kind of done a bit of a 180 on this. I'm one of those guys that says, I have been one of those guys that says, you know what? It's football. Let the players play. But in this particular instance, when you're in the second half of your season and you got the playoffs staring you right in the face, and you got crunch time in December, which is right around the corner. I think you do have to manage your roster and your playing opportunities because it is a long, grueling season. And you have to get guys healthy because sometimes when you throw them back out there before they're ready, they don't completely get healthy and it hurts your team. Early in the year, I don't feel as much. Later in the year, I feel it more so. Pick and choose your chances to be out there. They had a great chance to back some guys off and to put some other guys in there. They didn't do it, and it really cost them where Gronk was concerned.
There you go. And I think you said the key word, John, right there when you said the word manage. There's a reason why they call the baseball manager a manager, okay? Because he sits back, looks at the big picture, and manages things, okay? And I don't see any reason why you can't do that in football as well. When Tom Landry and Vince Lombardi were the two assistants on the New York Giants back 50 years ago, do you think the head coach on that team really did a lot of micro? No, he said, Tom, that you got the defense. Vince, you got the offense.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I got my office down the hall. You guys need me? You know, my door's open, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
He was a manager.
Yep.
And I think it was Jim Lee Howell was a manager in that situation. He wasn't out there tugging face masks. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for that. Of course, you're overall responsible, but you can delegate the authority. And I think he does that with Josh McDaniel. I'm not sure he does that a lot with the defense. I think he's still involved in the defense, so maybe it's Josh McDaniel's fault that Brady was still out there playing 7 minutes ago.
I don't know. I don't know like I said earlier, I'm not sure I'm going to pick on any one individual here. I think I think you have to blame a systemic failure here. And you played with fire where, you know, Gronkowski's concerned and you just got burnt and now you just cost yourself the best tight end in the game for about a month. That's what you did. And granted, maybe they felt like, well, hey, Hernandez is coming back, but I really don't think they think like that.
No, No, I don't think so either. And we don't know if Hernandez is coming back or not. Well, we won't find out until kickoff probably tomorrow night.
That's correct.
And but anyway, listen, you made a great also a series of great points about college football. And I want to just chime in on that.
Go.
And I have a question, which okay. I think you can really help me with here.
Because
you know, Nebraska was added to the Big Ten.
Yep.
To get them to the 12 team.
Yep.
And 12 seems like the magic number, because then you can play a championship game. Which
that's
kind of like
that's what the NCAA said, yep.
That's what they said, that you get to 12, you get to have your little cash cow championship game, which we've had in the SEC for years, as
correct.
You know.
Correct.
And but for some reason, the SEC added two more teams and got to 14. For mm-hmm. some reason, the Big Ten, which is actually with 12 teams in it, and is now going to have 14.
Yeah, right.
But we're still the Big Ten.
Right, correct.
You know, we're trying to emphasize academics.
Right.
There's a conference, they can't even count to 10.
Right.
But anyway.
I like that line. I'm going to steal that one.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
No sweat. I won't sue.
Al, how about but, I give you, I'll tell you what, I'll give you credit. How's that?
Go ahead. I'll take all the help I get.
I like that. Look, we're talking about academics here, and they can't even count to 10. That's
they
awesome.
They can't even count to 10.
That's awesome.
What is there anything more magical about 14 as opposed to 12?
Yeah, it's called
What is going on with that?
It's called greed.
Okay.
Greed. It's like, wow, we got 12, but if we go to 14 and we pull in this market or that market, look where we can put our Big Ten network, and look how much more money we can pull in and how much more money we can give to our schools. If we're able to pull in, say, the New York market or the Washington, D.C. market, which is the move behind the Big Ten going to Maryland and going to Rutgers.
Okay.
Now, it may very well be, the point I made earlier was, is that a buddy of mine, Pete Thamel, who writes and covers college sports for Sports Illustrated now, he found documentation from the Big Ten that says they project each member school to make $46 million annually by 2017 with their increased rights fees. Now, if that is true, I do not blame Maryland or Rutgers or anybody else one iota for doing that, because that would increase Rutgers' take by 8 times what they currently make. So I have no problem with that. But here's the problem that I have. It's short-sightedness. What all of these schools are doing, and look at Boston College, look at Virginia Tech. It's not happening right now with Texas A&M, but it could happen. Look, what they're doing now is they are reaping in the benefits now. But how in the world do we sustain this financial model without going broke? Hello, United States of America. Are we not now the one example of that in this country? We're borrowing more money from China than we ever have before in our history. We're so far in debt that our grandkids are going to be paying this off.
Well, you know, as the saying goes, John Rook, it's not what you make, it's what you spend.
Well,
and you know, if these colleges want to make a bunch of money, God bless. I mean, I have nothing against anybody making a buck. But you know what? You got to be responsible for what you spend.
Yes.
You can't just spend willy-nilly. And I mean, it's easy for a Bulldog fan like me down here to pick on Clemson, you know, because that's what we do.
Yes, I understand that.
But Clemson is a shining example of something. This happened about 10 years ago. I'm sure it's happened many, many more. And it happened with us one year, too, the university will pay a bowl game hundreds of thousands of dollars simply to say the word yes.
Oh, yeah.
To an invitation to go to a bowl game.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Whether they really deserve it or not, but, you know, can they sell tickets? Can they draw TV? What have you? Oh, I absolutely get that.
They don't care. They are willing to lose to take a financial bath. I mean, Clemson spent $600,000.
Well, if they're going
to
take
go to the Humanitarian Bowl.
Well, that's so they can still be relevant, and that relevancy now is going to begin to is well. First of all, Clemson has got to be looking. Clemson, Florida State, and a couple of other schools in the ACC. They've been looking. They are looking to move, and I do believe that there are more pieces of the ACC puzzle, regardless of Notre Dame coming in for all other sports. There are more pieces of the puzzle in the ACC that are, I don't know if this is what we need to do, because they don't want to be like, it's the same thing that happened with the Big 12. A&M got pissed off at Texas. And
right.
and so they left. And Missouri got pissed off, and Oklahoma almost got pissed off and left. Texas Tech almost got pissed off and left until Texas said, okay, let's dial it back a notch. Let's make everybody happy. But it wasn't enough to placate A&M, and they went off and took their toys, and they went to the SEC and played. And that's exactly what happened. Nobody will convince me elsewhere because I've heard from too many different people on this subject, people I know that are in the know on this. Now, as far as the Big Ten and all these other leagues and the ACC are concerned, Clemson, Virginia, Virginia Tech, now Boston College, there's an irony for you. They don't like the fact that Duke and North Carolina rule supreme. They don't like it anymore. They don't want to be a part of it anymore. Maryland is left for the Big Ten because they don't want to be in the shadow of Duke and North Carolina anymore. They want to be loved. And the Big Ten showed them love. Here's your love, Maryland. We're going to give you $24 million a year. That might double in the next 5 years. How's that for love? And why
that's
else do you,
a lot of love.
Why else do you think Maryland is even thinking about paying a $50 million exit fee? Because they can.
Well, and they'll probably get help paying it from the new conference. Probably.
Yes.
They'll probably chip in to help them
somebody.
Pay
well,
the exit.
They have an alum that established Under Armour. So Maryland to Under Armour is like Oregon to Nike. Okay?
To Nike. Okay.
Got it?
Well, look, like I say, John, I mean, if anybody wants to go make money, God bless. But like, when you're Clemson and you're paying $600,000 simply to say the word yes to a bowl game in Boise, Idaho in the middle of the week, during a snowstorm, okay, just because you want to get, what, 13 extra practices in and a couple of highlights on ESPN?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to spend that much money, take that much of a bath because you don't think it's really wasting money. You think it's some sort of an investment, okay? And Georgia, like I said, we did the same thing. We went to Hawaii 1 year.
An investment, Al, that's a great point. An investment that is going to continue to rise for the next couple of years, and then where does it go? Does your investment continue to rise at that kind of exponential rate in your own personal finances? No.
No. I just think, look, that just smells like a big waste of money to me, to spend that kind of money just to say the word yes before you've even spent money on a single hotel room or anything else. And
it is.
I'm just saying this, John. If you're going to spend that kind of money, which you can call it an investment if you're in favor of it. I call it a big waste because I think it's silly. But whatever you want to call it, if you're going to spend that kind of money, go ahead and spend it. But don't turn around and cry to me about how much it costs to wash the leotards for the women's gymnastics team.
Yeah, I know.
Okay?
Right.
Don't cry to me about how much it costs to send the women's golf team to Puerto Rico.
No,
okay?
No, you shouldn't ever have to have that as part of the argument ever again where these colleges are concerned. Al, I love
no
you.
No more crying about Title IX if you're going to waste that kind of money.
There's
is what
no,
I'm saying,
no, no question. I got to move on, Al. Hey,
you
thank
you. Bet, babe. Have a great
happy,
holiday.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and
you
yours.
You too. Take
right.
care.
We will talk to you soon. All right, I got to get a break in here. Thank you very much for letting us rant. We got to get back to the issue of football and the NFL this week. Take a break, and then Russell Baxter in the playbook.
Make your life better. Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Welcome back in the Playbook here. It is Tuesday. I realize that. It's a little bit of a different day here for us in the Playbook, but it's also a little bit of a different week because it is a Thanksgiving week. It's also a very short week for the Patriots. Because we've got the holidays. There are not one, not two, but three NFL games on Thanksgiving Thursday. Six teams involved on this Thanksgiving Day. So Russell's been kind enough to move his scheduled Thursday appearance. Since hopefully, Russell, at the same time, you'll be having turkey with your family or something on Thursday, right?
Oh, there's absolutely no question about it. I mean, anybody who knows me knows I haven't missed a Thanksgiving in a long time. In fact, I haven't missed many meals in a long time.
No, I'm not.
You know, the fun of Thanksgiving is, you know, it's funny because it is kind of, I know it, obviously it is to give thanks and so on, but it's one thing where eating is encouraged. The one holiday.
Wow.
You know, I mean, you think about Christmas and some of the other holidays. I'm not saying you don't have a fine spread and so on, but sure. Thanksgiving is, you know, you talk about Christmas as you can talk about, you know, the religious implications. You can talk about the gifts. You can talk about Santa. I mean, what's the first thing that comes out of your mouth with Thanksgiving? Turkey.
Turkey.
And what's the first thing that goes into your mouth?
Turkey. Although I would say football is probably pretty close second, so.
Well, you can do both at the same time. When they came up with the term multitasking, that was called putting the TV tray in front of the TV.
Hey, I will have a huge, huge multitask on Thursday because not only will I be watching the Patriots, obviously, the other games, but in addition to trying to juggle Thanksgiving dinner, but I've got to do NBC Sports Radio from 7 to 10 Thursday night, and I've got Texas TCU on the other channel going on. What am I going
to
do?
You are a machine, and I am glad to hear you so cheery. I missed you last week.
Yeah, thank you.
How are you feeling?
I'm completely over it all. But as you know, hopefully you've never had to have a kidney stone pass. But once you have it passed once, it usually means it does come back. So I'm already dreading the next opportunity. But I will tell you that I feel like I am equipped now with a good game plan for when such an occurrence does happen again.
Well, it is a passing league.
Yeah, I know. It just doesn't
pass. Well, I'm just glad to hear you good. All jokes aside and so on, I'm glad you're showing a little levity, and I'll show a little levity as well. But more importantly, I get to talk to you, and I'm glad everything. And I've never had to encounter it. I've had friends and family who have had to encounter it, and it's not something that's a good memory.
Oh, no. They say you don't remember pain. I say... You lie.
Because
I remember it. And let me tell you, it is no fun. It is no fun. All right, on to the business at hand. Six teams in action are on Thursday, which means it's a very short work week. Traditionally, and I know you know this as well as anybody, Russell, traditionally, teams on a short work week like this, I'm going to just venture a guess here and say that they actually don't fare all that poorly when they know they have a short work week. Is that true?
Well, it might be true for some instances. It certainly hasn't been true in the case of the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
This is a team that they are really, you know, when there were, remember there was talk a couple of years ago about, you know, tradition and, you know, why do we see the Lions every year and the Cowboys every year on Thanksgiving? And I think they kind of appeased that now with the third Thanksgiving Day game, which is going to be obviously the Jets and the Patriots.
Right.
But I would hope if they were going to take one of them away, it would not be the Lions. I mean, the Lions have been doing since 1934. And but the last 8 years, I'm almost hesitant to give out the numbers, but Lions 113, opposition 285.
Wow.
The last 8 Thanksgiving Day games. And we have seen some. We saw Peyton Manning 1 year throw 6 touchdown passes.
Well, they have been hideous to their
exam. Yes, we saw Christian. Yeah. I mean, but even last year, their playoff year. What was their Thanksgiving Day memory?
Yeah.
They couldn't get too many penalties, and then Dominican Sue stomping on somebody.
Yeah.
But 285 to 113, that's quite the 8-game show. Remember, the Titans were in there 1 year and beat them 47-10, the Colts 41-9. Some really, the fewest points they have given up in any one of those 8 games is 27 points.
Wow.
So all they get this week is the team tied with the best record in the NFL in the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
Who have never played on Thanksgiving. So, well, of course, they haven't also been around that long as well. But we saw something from the Texans last week. You know, we now saw in the span of a week, John, the Texans can win a slugfest in Chicago 13-6 and then come back from 2 touchdowns down at home and win a 43-37 game.
Yeah, that was a great game to watch,
you know,
too. Yeah.
Listen, you're going to have days where your defense isn't that great. We saw that with the Texans when they played Aaron Rodgers. Did we expect to see it with Chad Henne? Not necessarily, but they had an off day, but they still found a way to win, and you know, that's the great thing about good teams. You know, it's not a style points league. They lost no points in the BCS by beating Jacksonville by only 6.
You know, and I think that's one of the reasons, as I've kind of ranted on a little about the college game today, only because of what's, you know, transpired with the Big Ten expanding further. But I would tell you that, you know, in the NFL, wins are wins.
Yes.
Style points don't count. And I'm getting a little bit tired of having to have style points count in the college game.
Well, you know, I was pointing out to some earlier this year when the Patriots were losing all those, you know, and still, they have 3 losses this year by a total of 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
But as I like to remind people, they have 3 Super Bowl wins by a total of 9.
Yes.
Okay, now, as far as I know, those trophies look identical to the other trophies with the other 17 franchises that have won at least 1 Super Bowl title.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like when the 49ers won by a million or whatever it was, right?
Yeah, well, 49ers won 45-10.
Yes.
Patriots won 20-17.
Right.
Here's 1 trophy?
Yes.
Here's the other trophy.
There's the other trophy.
It's the same. Right. I mean, listen. You know, in this era of parity, which we know about, and there is to a degree of it, I just mentioned the number. You know, there have only been, and I know, listen, I'm not forgetting the franchises that won titles before there was a Super Bowl, okay? Far be from, listen, to me, the Packers have won 13 titles. That's the standard which I go with. The Bears 9, the Giants 8, the Steelers 6. But if we're just talking Super Bowl era, isn't it interesting to know that still almost half the teams currently around, 14 of the 32 have never won a Super Bowl title, and 4 of them have never been there, which is Jacksonville, Houston, Cleveland, and Detroit.
Yeah.
So we talk about parity, and it's true, but look who's won the Super Bowl the last 2 years. The Packers and the Giants, segue, they play each other this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Steelers recently. I mean, the Saints were a newcomer, and we've seen a lot of new teams get in the Super Bowl in this stretch of about 11, 12 years. But on the other hand, it still seems when it's all said and done that the same teams seem to win it.
Well, let me start then with Thursday and the Houston-Detroit game, which obviously is a matchup now of two teams that have never even been to the Super Bowl, much less won it. Houston certainly looks like a front runner now after they came from what looked like really being dead against Jacksonville and winning an OT this last week. Can Detroit keep their own hopes alive? And are they? Is this a winnable game for them at home against the Texans?
Well, I think it's winnable because, you know, the one thing about the Lions is they are capable of so many things. But the key word with them is capable. You know, keep in mind that they're 4-6 this year, but they're 0-4 in their own division. So outside the division, they're actually 4-2. But, of course, they also lost a wild game to Tennessee in overtime, which might have been. I know Houston-Jacksonville was wild last week. Do you remember the Tennessee-Detroit game?
Yeah.
Where Detroit scored two touchdowns in the last 18 seconds just to get into overtime without Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lions have been a team that have really been, I mean, they're at three or four games below 500 since last year's 5-0 start. So I don't think, to me, in the NFC North, the surprise is not that Detroit is 4-6. It's more the fact that Minnesota is 6-4,
mm-hmm.
and Minnesota's already swept Detroit. So if you're going to climb, you know, now that you got Dallas and New Orleans at 5-5,
yeah.
You know, those 4-6 teams have really, because we've got so many 6-4 teams, John. Minnesota,
yeah.
Tampa Bay, Seattle.
So Detroit,
you know, it becomes math,
yeah,
more than anything else.
Yeah, Detroit better think about winning out if they want a shot, right?
Yeah, and maybe 10-6 isn't good enough, and winning out is going to be tough. You know, considering they still have to play the Bears again, they have to play the Packers again. You know, they have not beaten. Since I'll just they have not beaten the Packers on the road since 1991.
Jeez,
I mean, that's more than two decades.
That's a long time.
Okay, that's even games in Milwaukee. Okay, so
this league isn't as full of parity as you think it is.
Well, you know, it is. It's what it is. It's full of solid organizations who stand the test of time. Because year in and year out, the better organizations are always contenders. Do they always win it? No, but they're always in the hunt. And that's why you marvel at a New England team that's had 11 straight winning seasons. And then you also scratch your head when you realize that the longest active playoff stretch in this league right now is only four straight years by the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah. Wow. That's remarkable. The second game on Thursday, Washington at Dallas. You just mentioned the Cowboys as well, and Washington certainly has taken a little comeuppance after RG3, you know, really burst onto the scene. That, to me, this is a traditional Thanksgiving game, just like, you know, Detroit versus Green Bay or Detroit versus Minnesota might have been in the years. Washington, Dallas, I remember, you know, back in the days when Clint Longley,
mm-hmm.
you know, pitched the Cowboys to a come-from-behind win over the George Allen-led Washington Redskins back in the 1970s. That's how far back I go. But, you know, the Cowboys are one of those teams, as you said, at 5-5. They really can't afford any missteps here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And listen, you talk about their tradition. I think this is the seventh meeting between the teams on Thanksgiving Day. And if my math is correct and I didn't miss something here, the Redskins are 0-6 versus the Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
See, I like that number.
No, I'm sure you do.
I like
them Redskins.
But that also tells you, though, that, hey, at some point in time, it's going to end.
Well, you would think so. Of course, it finally took the Cowboys about a year to win two games in a row last week, and they tried like crazy
to give
not
it away.
To beat the Cleveland Browns last
yeah,
week.
They did.
So it is just, you know, getting a grasp of them is very, very difficult. That being said, through all the craziness, through all the, you know, the usual drama that's arrived, you know, Big D stands for drama. It doesn't necessarily stand for Dallas.
Yeah.
Okay? But that being said, they are one game behind the New York Giants in the NFC East.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind that the Giants, and I'm not saying that, you know, we saw last year the Cowboys being 7-4 and losing four of their last five games.
Mm-hmm.
But the one edge the Cowboys have, now again, they're a game out. But they did beat the Giants. I know they split with them. But the Giants did lose that game at Philadelphia this year. And if these teams wind up tied, the head-to-head's not going to matter, but that divisional record could matter. So, you know, 2 weeks ago or two games ago, we were talking about, you know, another bad year for Dallas, and the Giants have lost two in a row. The Cowboys have won two in a row. You know, that season ended today thing that people like to throw out there doesn't work.
No, it certainly doesn't. We'll come back to the Patriots and Jets, but a couple of other games I wanted to touch on. Pittsburgh plays at Cleveland, and Cleveland obviously gave the Cowboys a huge scare. But I bring up Pittsburgh because of Plexico Burress and former Patriot Brian Hoyer joining the club this week because of the injuries that the Steelers have had. How does this affect Pittsburgh in the short term? I don't think it affects them much in the long haul, but in the short term, does this keep them afloat?
Well, that's what they need to do. I mean, last week, obviously, you don't want to lose to the Baltimore Ravens at home. For lack of a better word, I was discussing this with somebody else, Pittsburgh's offense very disjointed last week, I felt. It was almost as if after Byron Leftwich ran that ball in, which was a stunner, especially from how far out. I mean, they got a field goal the rest of the game. Their defense held the Ravens, I believe, to 200 yards on the nose, period. But the key to that game, I thought, was how the Ravens' defensive backs did a lot of hitting. And they really, I thought, took over the game. And it was a lot of their big hits. And, in fact, the one big hit, it looks like, on Jericho Cotchery is hence why we're going to see we're now seeing Plexico Burress back in Pittsburgh. So the Steelers are a little beat up. They've been beat up from day one, if you really think about it. We really haven't seen the complete Steelers. Yet Mike Tomlin's got them 6-4. And these next two games, two road divisional games, are going to tell us a lot about where the Steelers may or may not be headed, because they're two games behind the Ravens already, but B, they got the Cincinnati Bengals nipping on their heels.
Sure do. The other one, Baltimore at San Diego, and again, the Ravens are a team that Patriots fans need to be concerned with right now. San Diego's a team that's on the verge of falling into irrelevancy as well, and that's what I love about this time of year, is that you're really starting to separate the wheat from the chaff, to borrow a well-worn cliche, and I'm just wondering what San Diego might be in your estimation.
Well, San Diego was a team that manhandled the Ravens when they came out there on a Sunday night last year.
Right.
And, you know, the Ravens better on the road this year, but, you know, over the last year or so, you know, a little sometimes unpredictable. You know, they've not scoring a lot of points on the road. Remember, their offense didn't score a touchdown last week.
Mm-hmm.
They got the Jacoby Jones, you know, red hot. Jacoby Jones has returned three kicks, two kickoffs and a punt for touchdowns already this year. But when you talk about the Chargers, you know, perhaps one of the more perplexing players in this league right now is Philip Rivers. And I know the Chargers have disappointed people in the past, but, you know, we talk about certain quarterbacks and players in terms of turnovers. And we talk about Michael Vick, and we talk about Tony Romo. But the turnover tear that Philip Rivers is currently on, I mean, they played the Broncos two times this year, John. He had nine turnovers, all nine turnovers that the team committed in their two losses to the Broncos this year.
Mm.
This team, going back to the start of last season, has turned over the ball 50 times in 26 games, and Philip Rivers has 43 of the 50 turnovers.
Ooh. Wow.
I mean, that is a mind-boggling number.
No kidding.
43 turnovers, yet that's somehow North Turner's fault.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I got to figure it's got to be everybody's fault to a degree, but balls, again, it's not just interceptions. You know, he's also lost nine fumbles, so getting the ball slapped away from him. We talk about Mark Sanchez, we talk about Michael Vick, we talk about Tony Romo with the turnovers, but Philip Rivers has not done a great job securing the football, and a lot of times these turnovers are left directly to scores.
Sure.
That being said, I wouldn't be stunned if San Diego pulled this off.
No, and that's kind of where I was going, and I know the Patriots fans have to keep an eye toward Baltimore, because right now Baltimore's sitting very comfortably in the two spot in the AFC.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, New England seems like it's on its usual second-half tear. 59 points last week, my goodness. And doing it a lot of different ways. It wasn't just the offense, obviously. A couple interception returns, a punt return, and so on. And the Patriots are getting ready, and I don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 weeks, but I'll throw this out here because it was something I threw out during the summer on Bleacher Report. The Patriots are 142 points away from scoring 500 points this year, John.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they manage that feat, they'll have done two things. They'll have tied the NFL record for most consecutive seasons with 500 or more points. The Rams did that from 1999 to 2001.
Right.
But they also score 500 points. they will become the first team in the history of the league to do it in four different seasons.
Wow. Okay.
I like throwing that out there now, because what they're, if they're at 499, it doesn't look like it was a last-minute thought.
Right, exactly.
So, but when just something keeps
on the record,
that's basically averaging 24 points a game, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's a pretty fascinating number. They are, once again, leading the league in scoring.
They sure are. Then before we get to the Patriots and the Jets, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on Green Bay at the Giants, which is the Sunday night game, and the fact that the Giants are reeling a bit, lost two straight, as you mentioned, and Green Bay looks to have put itself back in position in the NFC. Could this be a survival battle? You know, because there seem to be a lot of really, you know, solid, if not spectacular, but solid teams in the NFC.
Well, I mean, obviously the Giants are going to want to know what's going on, well, have known what's going on with Dallas after they play on Thursday. Now, I'm not saying they let their guard down or anything, but, you know, the Giants have fallen into this peculiar habit, and it's been going on for a while, of getting off to great starts and then kind of, you know, lollygagging their way through the final eight games of the season. You remember last year they were 6-2, and they were suddenly 6-6, and then they were 7-7. I have no explanation for it whatsoever. It's been going back for a long time. I have a hard time believing it's all Tom Coughlin's fault.
Right.
Even happened before he got there. It's just odd, but, I mean, they have been offensively challenged the last couple weeks and, you know, not putting a lot of points on the board whatsoever. If you look at the Giants' last three games, and then one of those is a win, okay? Mm-hmm. They've only scored 62 points.
Mm-hmm.
They have three offensive touchdowns, two defensive touchdowns, and nine field goals.
Wow.
So that's, I believe, the win over the Redskins and then the losses to the Steelers and the Bengals. So their offense has scored three touchdowns in the last three games. Aaron Rodgers makes a habit of throwing about three touchdown passes annually. If you notice the tear that he's been on,
yeah,
during the five-game winning streak, Aaron Rodgers has 17 touchdown passes and two picks.
Yeah, he's on it. He's on it right now. He is on it.
Well, he's put up incredible numbers, and but I'll tell you, I'll throw this just out here. You know, when he played the Giants last year in the regular season and beat them 38-35, and of course in the playoff game last year, in which the Giants beat them at Lambeau Field, Aaron Rodgers did as much with his legs as he did. I mean, the Packers struggled to run the ball in those games, and he took advantage of the Giants' aggressiveness, and he was the guy who was getting those first downs with his legs, especially in the playoff game when they were struggling to score points.
Mm-hmm.
So keep an eye on Aaron Rodgers on the move as much as he is throwing the football on Sunday night.
Okay. Then that brings us back to the other Thursday game, New England at New York. It's, you know, Jets week around here. It seems to be missing a little something for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is, you know, the Patriots have won one already, but at the same time, the Jets really haven't quite lived up to their own hype, if not anybody else's hype, at just 4-6 coming in. And it is a short work week, so there's really not the time that we usually have to sort of build up anything between these two teams. And then, you know, listening to Rex Ryan earlier today in his conference calls, you know, it's kind of milquetoast, especially for Rex, and maybe it's because he's just afraid of saying anything because his team isn't very representative right now. So, you know, on a close week where you've had to play, both teams have had to do this. Patriots have, you know, a win that they're coming off of. The Jets are having disappointment that, you know, they're coming off of, although they beat St. Louis this last weekend. I'm wondering if the Patriots might not be stepping into a bit of a trap.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised at all. It's funny because you got two teams when it comes to putting points on the board are polar opposites. The Jets have scored 202 points this year. Now, I can do that divided by 10. That would be 20.2.
Yeah.
Okay. But the Patriots have scored 141 in their last three games.
Yeah.
And at least 37 in each game. And, of course, 37 is a convenient number because I believe that was the score at MetLife Stadium last year, 37-16.
It was.
On a Sunday night. Patriots, by the way, have also beaten the Jets on the road 9 of the last 11 years. That being said, I get the sense of what you're getting the sense of. And you know, this will be a desperation game for the Jets. And I'm not sure what will get thrown at Tom Brady and company. And obviously, you know, Rob Gronkowski's status is a big question mark here. I mean, he once again just continues to light up defenses. John, I'll ask you, is there any attempt that he will try to play this week?
You know, I can't imagine that that would be the case. I mean, stupider things have happened, but and we've seen guys, you know, cast up their arms and play with broken arms before. I castigated the Patriots earlier in this program, Russell, because I can't believe he was out there blocking an extra point, you know, with a 34-point lead and 4 minutes to play in the ballgame. That just completely blows me away the more I think of it. And, of course, I've had some fans say, well, you know, it was his job, yada, yada. But, frankly, you got to have management issues if you're letting somebody like that on the field, especially this late in the season, when every player and his ability to perform becomes that much more magnified because it's just flat out worth more. So because of that worth, I'm sure there will be some thought given to it. But then again, it can only happen if doctors tell him you can't hurt it anymore. And, of course, we've heard that said many, many times. And, frankly, I don't know what the efficiency rate is for that particular projection. Has somebody actually hurt themselves more when they've gone out there and played when they're told you can't hurt it anymore? I don't know that. I still believe that he misses this week and then rests, you know, for at least a week or two before he tries again, maybe tries to come back against Houston on the 10th. I don't know, because they play at Miami after they're done with the Jets. So, Russell, your guess is as good as mine, I think, at this stage, but I'd still be surprised if he played.
Yeah, I get the sense, you know, judging on the severity of what I've heard or read or whatever, it would be a surprise. You know, to me, this is going to come down to whether the Patriots can run on the Jets. And the Jets have been very spotty with their run defense. Even last week against Steven Jackson in St. Louis, they gave up some rushing yards. Not a ton, but more than you would figure in a 27-13 game.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is going to be a big part of it. But I wouldn't be surprised if Rex not only threw the kitchen sink, but the bathtub in the shower might be involved as well.
Right.
Maybe even a loofah or two.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why I sense this. I get the feeling that the Jets might steal this one. And, of course, I haven't been wrong all year. As I like to point out during my bold predictions, I think people think I'm serious when I say that, when I say I'm like 176-0. But, no, I don't know why I sense that, and maybe it even goes back to the last year. And if it does happen, it's going to be by 1 point or 2 points. And that just has been the Patriots this year. They win a lot of games with the blowouts. I know they've had close calls against both the Jets and the Bills in the last couple of weeks. And I don't know why I sense this. To me, the short week in this instance, John, doesn't really make a big impact for me.
Yeah.
Both of these teams actually played on Thanksgiving Day a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And not against each other, but, you know, the same day.
Right.
So the short week, and travel obviously is not an issue. You know, if Star Trek is around, you could just beam the Patriots down to MetLife Stadium or take a cab.
Yeah.
I don't know why I sense this. I get the feeling the Jets might steal this. And if they don't, just think of it this way. Well, about 10 or 11 days to talk about what's wrong with the Jets instead of the primarily basic seven.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. We'll have a little bit more time to talk about it. But I kind of have to admit I'm kind of leaning that direction, and through no other reason other than it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, which this time of year you find happening more often than it doesn't.
Yeah, well, it does. I mean, what more evidence than you need than last week? We've already referenced the Jacksonville game with Houston and Atlanta. Matt Ryan throws five interceptions, three in the first quarter.
Yeah, no picks, and he still wins. Right. Or no touchdowns, and he still wins.
Right, and these are two teams that, you know, the Cardinals came into that game, I believe, with a five-game losing streak.
Yeah.
The Jaguars went into that game with a six-game losing streak. And, you know, sometimes you're ripe for the upset. But both Atlanta and Houston were at home. So it just shows you the fine line. Hey, a couple weeks ago we saw the Rams tie the 49ers in San Francisco. If someone had given me that score, your first guess would have been where? St. Louis.
Right.
But listen, if you're not ready to play, I'm not. Hey, listen, the Patriots are always ready to play. I just get the sense there might be a crazy turnover, and it's going to be a one or a two-pointer, and it's just going to kind of keep that alive. To me, the interesting thing for the Patriots is, you know, they have a three-game lead on every team in their own division with six games to play.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, do you want to talk about, is there parity or is there just parity in the NFC East? And, they keep these teams at bay. And, again, I'm not saying their ability to score points, it can't be underestimated. Defensively, I still think they have some shortcomings. And maybe, just maybe, Here's the other thing about the Jets, and I know I'm going a little long-winded here.
It's all right.
The Jets have a habit. The Jets rarely, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen, they don't usually win one game in a row or lose two games in a row. They, you remember their season last year? 1-2, lost 3, 1-3, lost 2, 1-3, lost 3.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a little of that going this year as well, to a degree. They just got done the three-game losing streak. They're like a moody team. When they're in a good mood, they stay in a good mood. When they're in a bad mood, they're mad. And I get the feeling that here they could win this game, maybe even win another game. People talk about playoffs, and then we'll see how they handle prosperity. So I'm going to take a little bit of a reach here and lean toward the Jets on Thursday.
And see if they can't, you know, make something out of this AFC East race after all.
Well, that's probably their only shot, because if you look at the rest of the conference, it's going to be tough climbing above some of these teams, obviously, you know, especially since, well, they did beat the Colts this year. That's something to keep in mind with the Jets, although they did lose to the Steelers. But listen, we see it every year. Somebody gets hot at the right time and comes from nowhere, and then we also see a team that started out great and fades. I mean, look at the Cardinals. The Cardinals were the talk of the league in September, and they haven't won since their 4-0 start.
Correct. Correct. How strange it is. I hope that you and your family have a great holiday. Great Thanksgiving.
You too. I know who I'll be listening to on NBC Sports Radio.
Not me. Not me. But I appreciate the thought anyway. You'll be watching football.
You'll be watching football.
You are definitely allowed to do so.
I thought you said you were doing NBC Sports Radio on Thursday.
I am. But I mean, you'll be watching and paying attention to football. You won't pay attention to me.
I multitask here. I got the computer, I got the TV, and I have the cranberry sauce.
Oh, see, that's pretty good. Well, I did invite our Patriots listeners here. Hey, if you're not doing anything else, wink, wink. Log on to NBC Sports Radio on Thursday during the Pats game, because I'll be watching the Pats and Texas TCU just to stay up on things.
Oh, the Thursday's one. It really is one of those fun days. I think adding the Thursday night game was a big plus for the league. You know, it puts two more teams out there and so on. And, although the Patriots have won the last three times these teams have played, it's still one of the better rivalries in
right.
the league.
Totally agree. Totally agree. And that's what we're, I mean, I mean, the Jets, to me, that's the rival that it's been for a few years now. I think the Dolphins have kind of gone out that door because they hadn't been as competitive, but just because the Jets and the personalities involved, it's just much more a rivalry. It's got the whole New York Boston thing going. The Jets still get me going. I don't care how bad they may be or how good or how bad the Patriots may be. I'm ready for a throwdown when the Jets play the Patriots.
Here's the bottom line. The Jets are entertaining.
No question.
And there's so many different ways you can spin that.
They are not boring. That's true.
They're not boring. Yeah, that might even be better.
Yeah.
And stuff. And, some of that is, frankly, it's on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay?
Of course it is.
It's on purpose.
But I like the theatrics involved. I like that they do that. I like that they tweak. You know, I think it's good. It's good for the game. It's good for the interest in the sport around here.
Well, listen, it's, again, a rivalry. I mean, people always argue about rivalries because you got to have kind of a competitive to it. And listen, the Jets beat them at the Patriots in the playoffs a couple of years ago. This hasn't been necessarily one-sided. I mean, it's obviously the Patriots have won the last three meetings and so on. But, for a while there, Rex Ryan has had some of his better moments. He's had some of his awful moments against the Patriots, but it hasn't been all bad. So that's, again, what makes the rivalry pretty decent.
It's all good. Russell, thanks for the time. We will speak to you very, very soon again, my friend.
You got it. Happy Thanksgiving. Kevin, happy Thanksgiving. And, anybody else, happy Thanksgiving.
You got it. Thanks, Russell. Russell Baxter with us here on Patriots.com Radio and Patriots Playbook from ProFootballGuru.com. He also writes, of course, for Bleacher Report and ColdHardFootballFacts.com. And he's a great friend of the program, and man knows a lot about the National Football League. If you've listened to our program for any length of time, you certainly know about that. He gets himself out there and everywhere. Let me get a couple of Facebook posts in here, then I'm going to get back to the phones. Tim sends this on Facebook. He says, "Hope you're holding up, Mr. Rook. That secondary is enough to give anyone kidney stones." Funny how I've gotten that response several times through email and other sources. I'm with Big Al on a lot of his points. I don't find the Gronk play as heinous as the Seymour play from years ago. And I think it suffered from that knee for the rest of his time here. The issue I have is Gronk has been limited in practice. It just isn't gamesmanship on the injury report. You can tell he's hurting sometimes. So why not limit his snaps? Fells can't block that. Hooman, Who are the other guys out there? Or Ho'omanawanui. Hell, get Ron Brace's fat ham off the bench and do something. As for Tom being out there as long as he was, I couldn't believe it. On a short week, no less. That's crazy. Great job at the O-line. The turnover from a year ago and due to injury has been enormous, but Freeney and Mathis were non-existent. Remember those RG woes from preseason? Skronekia is the best in the business. Good points, Tim. Then Mary Beth says, the defense is still so soft overall. Need to stop giving up the big plays. Could not agree more, Mary Beth. I mean, that was the overwhelming impression I was left with until then I saw Aqib Talib turn one back, but then he still got burned a couple of times. By the way, she says, happy Thanksgiving. And same to you, Mary Beth. Same to you. All right, let's get back to the telephones. Our friend Kat in Chicago. Hey, Kat, you're in the playbook.
Hi, John. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you much.
So I had a couple of comments on the college football thing.
Go.
I completely agree with you, first of all. As someone who had 10 years of college and then grad school, it's absolutely ridiculous, the money-making that goes on, and it doesn't get distributed the way that it should.
Oh, yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, a couple of weeks ago they did a poll of the NFL players, and they asked the NFL players, knowing what you know now about concussions and injuries, would you still play in the NFL? And
right.
Both of them answered yes. And then they asked them, would you let your kids play? And they said,
I think we can't. Kat, we're losing your phone, so I'm going to drop the signal, and then hopefully we can get her to call back when she gets back in. So be aware of that, Kev, because I think she's going in and out of a cell zone. And I got about every fourth or fifth word, so I'm not quite certain what it was that she was trying to say. So I'm going to let Kat sort of rephrase if we get her back on the line. But unfortunately, her cell was in the process of going out there. We were working earlier in the program on, I guess it was Eldridge, I think it was, asked about Will Allen. And I thought I remembered this, but did research it. And yes, he was placed on season-ending IR, actually at the start of the season. I thought they got it. I thought, well, he hadn't been around. He was traded. No. IR, start of the year. So that's where Will Allen is. So he obviously is not going to be any kind of a factor this year at all. And I would be surprised if he's any kind of a factor at all, period, to be honest with you. Chris in Seattle says, I guess my nitpick will probably be in line with many. Why not pull your ones in a blowout? I just think with that much of a lead, pull your all-pro players out of the game. It's not like there's nothing to be gained by having your second string go in. I, for one, love the opportunity to see my backups out there when the game is in hand. And the Gronk injury drives the point home. C'est la vie. Jets week. I feel good about this game. It does have the aroma of a trap game. Division opponent. Disarray rallies to beat a perennial foe. But I think we've got this one in hand. He says Pats 36, Jets 20. I'm bumping up my prediction for the second half of the season from 6-2 to 7-1. I still think we'll lose one of either Houston or San Francisco, but I now fear less that we'll drop one to Miami. Even as I write that, I cringe because I know how often the friggin' Finns play us as tough as humanly possible, but I just think they don't have enough on their best day to beat us. And I'm cautiously optimistic that Talib brings just enough improvement to the secondary that it will now be middle of the road. And I am pleased with all the takeaways by the defense overall. Seems like every time one of our guys wraps up the ball carrier, I see them attempt to rip the ball out before they go to the ground. And often enough, they succeed. And our offense is pretty good, too. Good points all, Chris. Good points all. I'd have to say that I'm going to stay somewhat reserved. I've had some tweets and some folks ask me what I thought about, you know, the initial response on a Talib from this last week, and based on what I saw, which is basically what just about everybody else saw, because I was watching the game from a bar in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Yeah, but I was. I'm not going to lie. I just, you know, it was actually a lot of fun. I was through with my work for the day. I had finished my basketball game earlier in the day.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Thank you, Eddie. And I just, you know, that's the way it works. So, yeah, I enjoyed myself, watched it, and I saw basically what you did. But I would tell you that he does certainly have some missability when he's bringing that ball back. That was very much like Ty Law, if you will, when he was doing that. But I also know that it's going to take him a while to continue to acclimate back there because he got burned a couple of times. All right, Kat in Chicago's back with us. Sorry, Kat, you left us.
I know. I'm driving through Pennsylvania, and it's, what can I say?
Are you on your way to visit someone for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, and I'm going up to Maine.
So. Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Yep.
Safe drives.
I was going to stop by tomorrow, but you don't have the show.
That sucks, doesn't it?
It does.
I'm going to miss out. I know I'm going to miss out, but that was the edict from above. That came from above my head.
Yeah, well, when Kevin's not there, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's very true.
He keeps the whole thing running.
He does keep the whole thing running. How about that? Now he's got a big head, so it's going to be hard to be with him anymore. All right, your point was about the college stuff, correct?
Okay, right. So I'm relating, you heard what I was saying. They asked the players if they would still play, and they said yes. And then they asked whether they would let their kids play, and they said no.
Right.
And the way that this relates to the college game for me is that I think that they didn't ask the right question, which is, what would you do if you couldn't play football? And what would they say? A lot of these guys don't get an education. They graduate from one of these great schools that supposedly have great academics, and they can't read. And they can't, what if they graduate with a degree in science, but they can't get a job in that industry because they don't actually, it doesn't do them any good.
That's why
they didn't learn. They didn't learn the subject. So to me, you look at a lot of the injury stuff that's going on where the players, the ex-players are suing the league and all of that. I don't know why there aren't players suing the colleges because they make all this money off of the players, and those players are not getting an education, and they are not getting what they are supposed to be getting. And when they turn out that they can't play football, they don't have options.
Right.
And I think that's the criminal part. So.
Well, colleges, schools, universities, what have you, they're certainly culpable for that because, they don't emphasize it enough, and they rent these players to basically, further their fortunes, on the football fields or wherever, and then you're right, then they don't really see that things get done. And in larger schools where they have, football programs primarily that, churn it out, it's very easy to get, caught in the cracks. And for every success story, there's probably three or four, failure stories that, will break your heart. And it does happen. And that's why these college, presidents, they have to be, not the Jim Delaney's, the commissioners of the world. I'm talking about the college, the university presidents that are out there making these decisions to extend further the demands on their student athletes in the interest of making money for the school when this money doesn't go back to the student athlete to begin with. It doesn't. And you cannot argue, and nobody has shown me where we've increased our scholarship monies by 65% because we joined the Big Ten. Nobody's been able to make that parallel yet. What this is doing is it's setting up athletic departments and setting up institutions to build, more buildings and build statues and build this and build that, and these players aren't going to benefit from it.
Right. I completely agree with you. You're never going to get me to say that a guy who played college football was passed through all of his classes because he plays football, and then when he gets out and doesn't make it in the NFL, he's got a job at Home Depot for the rest of his life.
Yep.
You're never going to convince me that he didn't get a bad deal out of the whole thing.
Yeah. So. I mean, when you consider what you should get, if you actually have somebody that has your best interest at heart, then you're going to get exactly that you're going to get somebody looking out for you, is going to help you move along. I mean, we're bringing a guy in here that probably isn't well versed at, like a lot of other college students, prepared to do 4 years of college, but yet you're going to use his skills to help further your cause. Now, how about a little payback? And most of these colleges, most of these big time programs don't do that. They just don't. I've been in the collegiate game for better than 30 years. I've seen it more times than I care to even comment, and it makes me ill thinking about it, but that's what these football factories do. And fans are like lemmings. They'll watch games no matter who plays, no matter what time it is. And don't get me wrong, I'm one of those two. I love college sports, but I have to admit, this whole changing landscape, it has nothing to do with nostalgia and wanting to go back to the old ways and the old days. It has everything to do with I fear, and there's a very good column written today by Stuart Mandel from Sports Illustrated, I fear the future of this game. because we're mortgaging the future 10, 15, 20 years down the road for, you know, greed and satisfaction and big bucks today. And on a smaller scale, college athletics is what the United States of America is going through right now. We're mortgaging our future because we're going broke and nobody seems to be willing or wanting to do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, I can guarantee that if you ask those players what they want their kids to do instead of play football, that they're all going to say they want them to get an education and they want them to get a good solid job that they can work their whole life and have consistent pay and not have to worry about getting injured and all of that. So,
Kat, I'm
with you.
Kat, most big-time players, big-time programs, they're at those programs for one reason and one reason only,
right.
And you know what that is.
It's a football factory.
Of course.
It's a factory.
How about the kid? How about the kid at Ohio State that tweeted a couple of weeks ago, man, I didn't come here to play no school. I came here to play football. Yeah. That was his tweet. I mean, come on. You don't think that others out there, I mean, I give the kid credit. He may sound stupid, but he was speaking the truth is what right. He was doing. And I would venture a guess that he's speaking the truth for an overwhelming majority of major college football players in this country. That is sad.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, this is a kid who's probably 19, 20 years old. And at 19 or 20 years old, I did a lot of stupid things, too. And it should be, I think that the school, you can make the case that, well, these players know what they're doing and they could make the effort and they could go to school. And yeah, that's true. But there's also, the school has some responsibility to hold up their end of the bargain. Too.
Sure they do. If they're going to use that player, they have their responsibility
right.
to hold up their end of the bargain to see that young man or young woman or no matter the sport gets what they were promised, and that is an education.
Right, I agree.
And then beyond that, forget the other money, but, I mean, it's time to, with all this money that's being bandied about, and if Rutgers, for instance, going from the Big East to the Big Ten is going to end up going from $6 million a year to maybe $40 million or more in the next 5 years, where is that money going to the student-athletes? You want to show
that's
me?
Not,
who are you cutting checks for?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't have a problem with them getting paid. I think it would certainly make the whole system more transparent. We wouldn't have to worry about these. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we would have to worry.
Kat,
about
we could forget forever the guys that college football is an amateur sport. At right. least we would understand, you know what? This is for money. But right now, the NCAA and these college presidents hide behind the whole academia BS, and that's just crap. That's a load of crap. It doesn't exist.
Right.
It doesn't exist. So, as far as I'm concerned, college university presidents in this country, they're on my S list, okay? I want nothing to do with these people. And I think they're the biggest frauds perpetrating American society right now because, number one, they're out there grabbing money wherever they can, and number two, they're not giving it back to people who can't afford to go to their damn institutions in the first place.
Right. Yep, I agree.
That's all there is to it, bottom line. So these people, as far as I'm concerned, they're worthless. Come to me when you can give me something I can use. Right?
Well, yeah, I agree.
Thank you. Thank you. And you don't you don't have to agree with me, but thanks anyway.
I do, though. So.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Have a good Thanksgiving, okay?
Kat, you too. Safe travels, okay?
Thanks.
All right, talk to you soon. Kat in Chicago, on her way to Maine for Thanksgiving. I like it. Let's see if I can grab a couple of more thoughts here. John sends this on Facebook. He says, my nitpick is the fact that everyone second guesses Bill for leaving players in. This was a freak injury, could have happened at any time. The fact that it happened late in the game gets everyone up in ire, not to mention Gronk is 6'6", 265 machine. It's not like they put Brandon Lloyd out there. Not to mention we have six tight ends and one kicker. Shouldn't we have the best players protecting him? Well,
Lloyd!
I understand where you're going, John, but, I mean, they do have six tight ends. I mean, Shanko couldn't have blocked. Fells couldn't have blocked. I mean, why does it have to be Gronk? I mean, we're talking about an extra point with a 34-point lead. So what if Gostkowski gets one blocked? I mean, not for nothing. We're talking kickers. You're comparing a kicker to the best tight end in the game. And I don't wish any ill will on any kickers. Don't get me wrong. I think we got our priorities messed up here. Priorities are messed up. That's all. Just, it shouldn't be like that. It's absolute lunacy. Brooklyn Matt, welcome back, John, albeit I still don't hear any acceptable reason why you missed any of shows or the game. I think it had been hilarious if you still insisted on doing them while groaning away in agony the whole time. Just imagine your trademark call. It's other Patriots. Ugh. Everybody in the crowd would have been wondering what was going on up in the booth. Teams on the field would be shrugging their shoulders. Phil Simms and Jim Nance would be informing the national audience that something was amiss with a stadium announcer. Hey, you could even gotten your own press conference up at the podium after Bill, Brady, and Edelman went first. All right, now we're getting ahead of ourselves, Matt. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving. You feel like one of those unofficial family uncles to everyone in Patriots Nation. You are a presence. Brooklyn Matt, you are very, very kind to say that. I'm not sure that I agree with it, but thank you anyway. All right, Tony says, John, 100% disagree with you. Pretty easy to throw out the stern judgment after the fact. Fact is all teams use important players on the PAT team, and the injuries are next to nil. I'm not stupid, and I do realize that the chance for injury would actually be nil if he wasn't on the PAT in the first place. But you even said it yourself. I doubt Indy was going hard on that play anyway, which would have probably reduced the injury risk even further. You ever actually watch a point after try? Unless the defense is actually down by only one, it's at the end of the game, everyone just stands around. It was a freak occurrence, John. Yeah, you're right, Tony. It was a freak occurrence that didn't have to happen if you had somebody managing the game. That's all I'm saying. You have a right to disagree. But if you have somebody that's properly managing the game, quality control, you ever heard of that, Tony? Quality control. Hey, you know what? Shouldn't be out there. Get out of there. Hey, you shouldn't be out there. Get out of there. Let's get the other guys in there. That's what we pay other guys to do. We have how many guys on this roster? 47? 46, 45, how many do we have each and every week that are actually activated? I lose count sometimes. You're telling me you couldn't find one other guy? And the point I also made, Tony, was earlier, what if Gronk had gotten hurt in the first quarter? You're telling me that there would have been nobody else that would have replaced him? They couldn't have found somebody else to block on the PAT? Of course they could have. He didn't need to be out there in a meaningless situation. Pretty easy to throw out the stern judgment after the fact. Well, of course it's easy. Of course it's easy. Fact of the matter is, it's also easy to sit back from where you are to disagree. Freak things happen. Football is football. Frankly, Tony, I largely agree with that. Football is football. Injuries happen. Move on. Injuries should not be a reason for whining and moaning about getting beat. That I also agree with. Largely. I also agree with that. He says, do we know who else is on the PAT team? If you give me a list of the entire PAT team, we could go through it together and decide who should sit and who should play. How does that sound? I'll let you do that, Tony. Joe in Michigan says, John, I missed the last couple of weeks with giving predictions, but now I'm here. Great win against a hot Indian team, but definitely unfortunate to lose Gronk. Anyway, here's my prediction for the Jets game. I think the Patriots will win, but I don't think it'll be easy. I think it'll be similar to last meeting, but the Patriots will win in regulation 31-24. Brady will throw a couple of touchdowns, one to Lloyd, one to Hernandez, assuming he plays. I'm hoping that he does because they don't have Gronk, right? Vereen and Ridley get a rushing score, Gostkowski a field goal. Brady's touchdown pass to Lloyd comes in the last 2 minutes for the game winner. Hope to hear your thoughts. Glad to hear you're healthy. Thank you, Joe. That's probably as good as any, to be quite honest with you. I think it will be a closer call than we realize. I don't know that it'll be a 29-26 thriller in overtime right down to the end like the previous meeting was here at Gillette a few weeks ago. But I do think that the Jets will cause the Patriots some anxious moments on Turkey Day. The Patriots showed me one thing against Indianapolis that I wasn't sure that this team was going to be capable of this year, and that is the ability to score from many different angles and facets and parts of the team. You know, they got it in the kick return game. Edelman was fantastic. They got it from the defense, from Tlaib. They got it from the offense. I mean, they got it in all different aspects of the team. And if they can continue to do that, then you could overlook the fact that the defense is ranked 30th against the pass, which is still horrible. Statistically, it's not a heck of a lot better than what it was a year ago. Slight improvement, yes. but still largely horrible. But you can look by that if they're causing turnovers, you know, if they're scoring in the return game, if they're helping to keep their offense off the field to keep them fresh so they're that much more potent when they really need to be. And that is what I think will probably be the ultimate difference. I don't think the Patriots will lose, but it won't surprise me if they do. We'll see how fired up the Jets get. All right, our fantasy guys are coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. And again, this is our only program of the week because we're all out of here. In fact, just about everybody is out of here as of about 2 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow for the holiday, including Kevin, who's heading off to New York for the game himself. So we'll have this on as a replay for you on Wednesday. The game, obviously, is Thursday. But, hey, Patriots fans, if you're watching and you got your computer around, come online. Join me Thursday night between 7 and 10 p.m. Eastern time on NBCSportsRadio.com. I'll be here broadcasting live from the stadium watching football. Yeah. And hopefully watching it with you. All right. Fantasy's next. We'll see you in same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. Brought my boys with me, say what up to Tata, still sipping my top, sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five, I be spiked out, I could trip a referee, tell by my attitude that I'm most definitely from.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.